Hey listeners, Chloe here. If you need to stay as up to date with the latest developments and innovations in the luxury industry as I do, you need to dive into Vogue Business. It's your ticket to a global perspective on fashion and beauty, delivering exclusive insights that will give you the edge in this competitive, dynamic industry. Just visit VogueBusiness.com today and use the code RUN20 at checkout to join the Vogue Business community. That's VogueBusiness.com, promo code RUN20. Don't miss out. Welcome to the Run Through with Vogue. I'm Chloe Mal.
And I'm Cho Minardi.
We are exactly 1 week away from Thanksgiving, and as many of us pack up to go spend time with our families, for better or for worse, we have a very moving family story to share with you today.
But first, our favorite headlines this week.
So I spent all weekend watching The Crown, which the
Such
new...
Such a slog.
Yeah, it's season 5. It's the early 90s. It's when the monarchy sort of is having one of its darkest moments. And it feels like a long grind through a rainy day. But I'm there. I'm there for it, and I'm doing the work, and I feel like it's worthwhile. I mean, I would say spoiler alert, but you should know your history, so I don't care. We really are watching the downfall of multiple marriages, most notably Prince Charles and Princess Diana. I know that Michelle Ruiz did a very good piece about this from Vogue.com. It's like, Dominic West is too handsome to play Prince Charles, and I think it—
Way too hot.
Got a lot of traffic because we are not the only ones who think this. And it's true. I feel like Josh O'Connor was so good at inhabiting this sort of uncomfortable Eeyore-ness of Prince Charles. And Dominic West is just he's too much swagger.
Way too much swagger, way too much charm, just way too much of everything. So yeah, they needed a different casting. I thought Elizabeth Debicki was kind of perfect. I mean, watching her in that revenge dress, and that was incredible.
Wait, I'm not there yet.
You're not there yet?
No, I'm only 4 in.
I'm so sorry. Okay, well, let's backtrack. I will say that my favorite episode so far has been the episode that goes into Mohammed Fayed's history.
Oh, I just watched that. The Crown has done this maybe once or twice a season, every season, where they do this sort of mini self-contained narrative in a single episode. And it's always, I think Peter Morgan is so smart at that, because if you think about just the breadth of the stories that could be told around this subject, the choice of what to include and what not to include is the most important thing that Peter Morgan's doing. So I thought that was a really unexpected, thoughtful, and very engaging way to dive into that.
Which I thought was really fascinating and stood as an episode that you could watch by itself and not have to watch the other dreary content.
I know. I was so happy to be moved to Egypt. I was like, oh, thank God.
I know. Just something else.
Get me
else.
Out of Scotland.
Yeah, get me out of Balmoral, please. help.
Well, you know who won't be watching The Crown this weekend is David Beckham, because he will be at the World Cup in Qatar, which is of great debate and derision, because Qatar has a abominable record on human rights, workers' rights, gay rights, and many people are boycotting the World Cup, furious at people who are not doing so. It's caused quite a lot of controversy for FIFA, the International Football Federation. Is that what it stands for?
I'm hearing that his status as a gay icon is about to be shredded. That was the word from CNN.
I mean, I do feel like that's a very fashion media take on the World Cup. My husband is a huge soccer fan. He's like, what are you talking about? No one cares about David Beckham. He's not even playing. And I was like, we care.
He's officially an ambassador of the Qatar World Cup. I mean, it's not nothing.
I know. But if he's not on the field, there's an argument that we don't really care.
Right. I mean, I've heard some players are going to kind of make a statement by wearing, rainbow-colored armbands. Let's be fair. And I think the fashion world isn't off the hook for this either. I mean, there was a huge event a couple of weeks ago in Qatar. It was called Qatar Creates, I think. Ugh. And, there was this big opening at the Museum of Islamic Art. And a bunch of fashion people were there, editors, stylists, models.
I mean, I opened my Instagram and it was just the desert for days.
Yeah.
I was like, what is happening? These people are usually at a dinner at Bergdorf's. Frankly, I was shocked that Mayor Adams wasn't there.
So this week was basically the auction of the century. It was an intersection of fashion and literary people. You know, Joan Didion's
personal artifacts
were auctioned off. And it was, you know, eye-opening to see some of the things that sold and how much they sold for. For example, you know, everyone is talking about those Celine glasses, and they sold for $27,000. There were Bottega ones, but they did not sell as much. But she is known for those Celine ones.
It's really horrifying because there has been sort of this distillation of Joan Didion in the Instagram culture, where she's just sort of been boiled down into this signifier of chic and sort of restraint and resolve. And I feel like people who are Instagramming their recent purchases from the Rose sample sale are also Instagramming like their 1980 copy of the White Album. So there's sort of this unfortunate evolution of Joan Didion's reputation. And in a way, this sale kind of solidified that. And the fact that the Celine sunglasses that she wore in the 2015 ad, which are probably cost $350, that they sold for $27,000.
Right. But
something that you're going to like lose on the beach.
But just to put this into context, Steve Jobs's really like crumbled looking Birkenstock sold for over $200,000 this week on auction.
Yeah, but there. I mean, that is just insane. Like, and also that's disgusting. Like,
I know.
At least sunglasses, you wipe them down, they're clean.
But do you think people buy them to wear them? I know,
no.
I mean.
It's a religious relic. It's,
right.
I mean, this is not
they
like.
They put them in a case? Or what happens to them? Are they in a safe?
I hope if you're paying $200,000 for something, you're putting them in a case.
Yeah.
But, like, this is not like the Christie's Paul Allen Masterworks by Master Painters sale. This is people, I mean, the woman at Stair Galleries that did the Joan Didion auction, she said that people were calling to say, I can't afford anything, but how much would a single paperclip be?
Wow.
Like, there was a lot that had been organized.
It's a real cult.
But there was a lot that was organized that looked like the bargain bin of Staples. It was like an old, like, legal pad and a bunch of old, you know, binder clips. And it sold for $4,000.
Wow.
And you're just like, people are just, I don't know, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah. So, newsflash.
Okay.
Balenciaga has left Twitter.
Do I care?
I think you should care. I mean, I think it sort of raises the question, will other fashion brands follow? Will other fashion people follow? Will
Is
we
this
see,
like the beginning,
is this the beginning of like
a mass Twitter exodus?
Yes. You never know. I mean, I think it's good. I mean, I think Elon Musk has made a mess of it so far.
Okay. And so what will this augur for other fashion companies going forward? And what about like individuals? What about fashion influencers?
Exactly.
And journalists, et cetera.
I mean, it does help that, you know, Twitter isn't particularly a fashion
well, that's true.
Forward like, space.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a visual space. So, you know, I think Instagram sort of holds that along with, you know, TikTok for Gen Z.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think it's meaningful and I still think it's something to watch.
Okay. All right. You can watch it.
I'll
keep
watch
me posted.
It. I'll keep. I'm disabling my Twitter
I haven't been
account,
on Twitter
so
for
I won't be able.
5
to.
Years. So.
I rarely use it. I rarely use it. I'm not a big tweeter.
No.
Okay, so after the break, we have two interviews: one with supermodel Natalia Vodianova and her long lost sister, and one with Black Panther star Michaela Cole.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
everyone, it's Chloe, and I'm so excited to share something fabulous with you. Vogue's first ever global fashion community, Vogue Club. Our members get to mingle with Vogue editors, yes, including me, and fellow fashion enthusiasts at exclusive events around the world. And that's just the start. Membership opens doors to the fashion industry, bringing you expert career advice and insider style and beauty tips. What are you waiting for? Head over to Vogue.com/membership to join, and here's a little treat. Use code TRT20 and snag 20% off your membership. That's TRT20 for 20% off your ticket to Vogue Club. Are you in?
Fair warning to our listeners, our first interview is a bit of a tearjerker.
Yes, that's right. We spoke with supermodel Natalia Vodianova and her sister Jenna. But honestly, it wasn't until recently the two had even met.
Natalia and her sister were separated shortly after Jenna's birth.
A few years after this separation, Natalia's modeling career blew up. She was signed as a model in Paris at the age of 17.
Yeah, but she spent her early life in Central Russia, which she describes as very bleak. She even helped support the family when she was 11 years old by selling apples on the side of the road.
And Natalia was raised by a single mother, so when her mother became pregnant with her fourth child, she had to make a really difficult choice.
Natalia was 15 at the time and was old enough to vividly remember the decision to give up baby number four for adoption.
Do you have a memory of the last time you saw her or what it was like leaving her?
Yes, and it was in a hospital and I wasn't allowed to pick her up. So I just put my hand through the baby bed to just, because I wanted to touch her and she just grabbed my finger. Mm. And then, of course, I was crying my eyes out and we stayed like this for as long as I could. And, in that moment, I kind of quite stupidly made a promise that we'll see each other again. Mm. So it was really, really hard to live with. Oh.
The baby was named Masha at birth. She is now Jenna Burns. Jenna was adopted by an American couple who couldn't have children of their own.
Jenna says she had a very happy all-American childhood and she never thought there would be a chance to meet her biological family. But at annual checkups with her doctor, she never knew how to fill out the medical history and she subscribed to a DNA app.
Natalia and her sister Jenna join us from Paris and North Carolina.
From what I knew about the circumstances I was born into, I didn't expect to find any family. I didn't even know if they were alive. I got my test results back and I was healthy and then there she was. So I didn't know who she was before the test. I just Googled her name and I didn't even think it was her. I was like, oh, that's so funny. It's such a coincidence. There's someone out with the same name.
So what did you do next?
Nothing.
Nothing.
In all of my research about her, it sounds quite creepy, but I did look into her a lot. I knew that no one knew I existed. She had quite a public life and I wasn't part of it at the time. So I wasn't sure if she was interested in a relationship. So I really didn't do anything. I didn't tell anyone. I think I told like the guy I was dating at the time and then like two of my friends. I think a couple weeks went by where I was knowing this information and I just like, I typed up a message. I didn't tell anyone I was planning on messaging her. It was kind of a last second decision. I was sitting in my room at like 2 o'clock in the morning and just couldn't sleep. And so I just, pulled up my phone and sent her a message. And I wasn't sure if she would respond.
What did the message say?
I'll read it. I got it pulled up on my phone. So I said, hi, my name is Jennifer Burns, and I was born in Nizhny Novgorod in 1999 under the name that, that I was given. According to this DNA site, you could be my aunt or half-sister. I said, after doing a bit of research, I figured that you are possibly the famous model with the same name. Whether or not this is true, I want to emphasize that I'm not trying to disrupt your personal life by contacting you. I'm perfectly content in simply knowing that you are alive and well. Feel free to contact me again. However, if you are not interested in a relationship, I understand. This is all very new for me as well. I did not expect to find any close family members when taking this test. Assuming you knew of my existence and have possibly wondered about me, as I have with my biological family, I'll just leave you with the knowledge that I'm happy and doing well, and I hope the same for you.
Wow. I'm getting goosebumps just hearing you read it.
You can imagine my state when I read this, but I did not read this for 2 years. By the way, it's something that those emails, you know, they come every week. There is you have a new biological, like 50 new relatives.
Yeah.
And every week you receive this. And so, of course, when I first did this test, which was in 2018, so just a year before Jenna did it.
Wow.
You know, the first few months I was jumping at all these messages and sort of like, and then, you know, you are 0.04% related or 0.5% related. It's your fifth cousin, your sixth cousins. You know, at some point I'm like, who are you kidding? I mean, why would she be doing this test? It just was too painful. So I just stopped. And the reason why I even saw this message, because our sister Christina did it. Even when she saw Jennifer appear on the site as a sibling, she saw that it was somehow my fake identity on the site. So she sent me a message. She said, "Is that you?" And of course, I straight away realized that it was Jenna. I mean, I say Jenna, but Jenna was not Jenna. Not Jenna to me is now. Yeah. But
and what did you write her? How did you respond when you finally saw it 2 years later?
I said that I'm just gutted and devastated that I'm just seeing this now, and cannot believe that this is happening, and that I've been waiting for this moment. Since the moment we said goodbye, and I didn't see a letter from her for a couple of years. Will it take her a couple of years to see a letter from me? I was frantic. I was just frantically Googling all Jennifer Burns's in the world.
Jenna, what was your experience? Will you flip back to your side of receiving that message?
I opened all of my emails and it was like 10 or 15 messages between, you know, the two of my sisters. And I was sitting there in the car, like in complete shock. And my friend was like, you know, what's wrong? Is everything okay? And I just like handed her my phone. She was one of the only people who actually knew who my sister was. And so we both freaked out together.
Oh my God. Could you read one or two of those messages? Do you have them?
I mean, Natalia, do you mind me reading them?
No, I don't mind. Of course.
You said it. It was quite funny because, you know, they were so frantic. I could tell them like say a lot of things in a short period of time. But I could tell she was typing very fast. There was a lot of misspelled words. A lot of exclamation points. She basically, you know, said, "Hello, I just got your message. You know, you can't imagine what this means to me. I've been looking for you for so long. You know, I'm very overwhelmed. I'm crying rivers. I have so much to tell you, so many hugs to give you, so happy." Like,
aww.
And then at the end, she said, "I hope it doesn't take you 2 years to read this."
So you two planned a trip to meet each other. What do you remember about it?
I just remember it seems like it happened in slow motion because we were standing there getting our luggage and I turn around and she was like there on the other side of like, I couldn't hug her yet because there was this big glass like viewing area.
Yes, we were very impatient. So we went where you can see all the people getting their luggages and we were looking and finally, so they were walking out. Just as I see her, she's turning around and she sees me and she's like, "Ah!"
You know, she was smiling and waving and I looked like I had seen a ghost. I was pale. I was sweating. I was doing so unwell. And, but, you know, walked around the corner and she was there and she just like, you know, held her arms open and I just walked into them and then we, you know, hugged and cried on each other's shoulders. It was great.
Wow.
And release all the Yes, all this tension that built up over years, many, many years. So it was great. We went to south of France, got drunk together, danced together, traveled a bit together, got to dress up together, went to museums and had fun in Paris. And definitely all this was with a lot of hugs.
Jenna, do you have any memories from Paris that really stick out from that trip?
You know, the big three introductions, the first time I met her, the first time I met Christina, and the first time I met our mom, all are very, like, significant memories.
And Jenna, can you tell us about meeting your birth mother and just a little bit what that, I can't imagine what that experience must be like.
It was not at all like meeting either of my sisters. It was a very like private and intimate introduction. I was sitting on your back patio facing away from the door and I just turned around and she was there. We couldn't understand each other. I didn't know any Russian and she didn't know much English, but it was a very like intimate moment, lots of hugs. I feel like I was like in shock. Yeah, it was beautiful, but also like really scary. I just remember being nervous and like, oh man, what if she doesn't like me?
Oh,
she was crying a lot, our mom, and it was different for her because Jenna and I, we got to know each other. We were communicating all the time. We speak the same language. She doesn't speak English, so for her, there's so much, of course, she wanted to tell Jenna that she couldn't tell her. And I think that it was all in that emotion, all in that hug, in those tears, and that hand-holding. And I underestimated what it really meant to her as well. I really underestimated what a release she had finding her and knowing that she's well and that everything is worked out the way we hoped. And I actually, since we got the news and since this year, she just blossomed. She's been walking on clouds lately. She just says, I'm so happy, I'm so grateful, life is so good.
Has this changed your concept of family and sort of the way family comes together and the way you think about family?
It's really strange now that Jenna is back in our lives. I don't feel like she was ever not there. Like it's sort of almost like a bad dream. So it's, yeah, for me, not much has changed, but I imagine it's very different for Jenna because she didn't know I existed and she didn't remember me.
To me, the more people that are added, the more blessed I feel in a way, especially, you know, my sisters not thinking there would ever be a possibility of this happening. I do know other adopted children and I don't know anyone that this has happened to.
Wow.
I definitely consider myself to be very fortunate, you know, so fortunate that my family is so supportive and, you know, wants to be part of this as well. And just that I'm, you know, very, very lucky.
We are, but we do have an issue of managing holidays. So,
yeah.
Yeah, what happens?
Jenna is going to be so in demand this Christmas.
This has been amazing. And
it's been truly amazing.
We feel so grateful to you both for taking the time and the emotional effort to share this with us. It's such a remarkable story, and I'm just so thrilled to hear about this. It's unbelievable.
Truly remarkable. Thank you both so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you so much for being great listeners and giving us the space to express this joy. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Oof, and Annie Leibovitz actually photographed Natalia and Jenna together, and the image is really beautiful and powerful, and I encourage everyone to go to Vogue.com and check it out.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. And if you'd like to know even more about their remarkable story, our colleague Hamish Bowles wrote a fantastic piece for the magazine that's also on Vogue.com.
Hey, Run Through listeners. Are you curious about what goes on behind the scenes at Vogue and in the world of fashion? Join Vogue Club, a one-of-a-kind fashion community where you can unlock exclusive access to Vogue editors, industry players, and fellow members, as well as receive expert style advice, tickets to VIP events, handpicked gifts, and so much more. Visit VogueClub.com today and get 20% off using promo code TheRunThrough20. That's VogueClub.com, promo code TheRunThrough20.
Chom, I want to hear about your interview with Michaela Cole.
No, it was so much fun. You know, she was actually in town, so we did it. You know, she came into the studio, and she's so much more of a podcast pro than I am. When she got to the studio, she wanted us both to wear headphones.
Is it these ones?
I don't know if we need to. Okay, maybe it's weird.
I like it.
You
I think
like
I like
it.
It.
I like
yeah.
it too.
It's been a while since I've done a podcast.
It
this
feels,
is nice.
Oh, it feels different when you're
It does.
It feels nice.
Yeah.
So cute.
You know, I feel so lucky because I got to spend so much time with her this year.
Yeah, Choma wrote the amazing cover story on Michaela for our November issue, and you got to go to Ghana with her.
Yeah, it was amazing. I got to go to Accra. We shot.
Oh my God.
We shot all across the city. At one point, we were on the beach, and there were, you know, riders on horseback surrounding us. It was really
special. The photos
special.
Are spectacular. Everyone should go to Vogue.com to see them if you haven't, because they are just a magical mystery tour of life across Accra. It is incredible to see who it was. Ibn Kamara who styled them, and
Kamara and Malik Bodian shot the images.
Incredible.
Yeah, it was really special. And we talked a bit about the shoot and why she wanted to be in Ghana. And it's funny because I realized I never knew why she wanted to do the shoot in Ghana. So I asked her.
Whenever I'm asked, I always say Ghana because I'm passionate about bringing work there, about working there, because I want people to know how possible it is to create amazing things there. And my dad is always, you know, oh, and he's in the shoot.
Yeah.
I'm like writing. And
your
I'm,
grandma.
And my grandma, yeah. And so when I'm writing and I say, oh yeah, it's set in Ghana, my dad's always like, ah, why? Why not America? Go where the money is there. What are you doing? But I want, even just for my dad, if it's for my dad alone to understand that we can create amazing things in Ghana, then that's my mission. And that's why I said Ghana. Yeah.
What did dad and grandma think of the pictures? They look pretty amazing.
So proud. My dad is like the whole of no, in fact, what my dad actually said is, most of Esikuma are proud of you.
Why most?
I'm like, do I dissect that, Dad? Like, what does that mean? Like, who else have you spoken to that has some critique about our choices? But he's generally very proud. Just to hear, like, my cousins who are like, wait, why is Uncle in Vogue? Why is Grandma in Vogue? What's happening? Everybody's heads are spinning. But my dad loves it. My grandma just adores it. I'm trying to get it printed out for her so that she can stick it up in her house and gaze at her beautiful self.
Yeah, that has to be framed. That's a good holiday gift. I'm feeling that for the holidays.
Oh my God, that's a very good point.
Yes.
It's a holiday gift. It's a, you know, get small versions for the Christmas cards. Just keep, it's the gift that keeps on giving.
It is the gift that keeps on giving. And it was such a gift to go with you. There were some hair-raising moments, I must say. I watched Michaela shut down traffic. You were skating in the middle of the street. I mean, but people do. I mean, in Ghana, I've seen.
Yes.
We saw people skating in the middle of the streets. It's like a thing.
It really is. I was just having so much fun.
Yeah.
Chilled. At one point, there was IB in the truck and I would skate. And sometimes I would just hold onto the truck and I would let the truck just wheel me through. It was fun. The other hair-raising time that everybody else experienced was the horses.
The horses. So just to set the scene, we go to the beach. It's actually, I think it's like, it was a holiday. I think it was Eid. So we sort of passed crowds of people dressed up. It was a really beautiful day. Then we go down to the beach and there are horses. Like, it sounds so random, and it was, but actually I think that horses on the beach are a thing in Accra. It's sort of kind of great, right? To see these young people riding horses. Mm. And for me, that was just like I took an intake of breath. I was like, wow, like as if this place couldn't be more cool. Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't have wanted to be surrounded by them.
I don't know necessarily. Why. I just felt very safe. And I have no idea why. There's no reason for me to feel safe in that situation. But I did. Mm. The horses were going round. And it's only when I saw Malik's little video that I realized how close. Yes, because everybody was like, Michaela, there was a moment where it looked like the horse was going to crash into you. And 1,000%. I was just busy doing Vogue. I was like, let me just channel my you know, Madons. Let me just be voguing. While the horses were literally like grazing the hairs on my back. I didn't know. I just felt, I think the adrenaline of the fact that it was happening, that we were shooting for Vogue in Ghana, I was grinning the whole time. I think after the first day, I cried. I was just like, for this to be happening is incredible.
Mm.
And I generally, you know, as I say, I don't process things. But I think when we wrapped on that day, I did. And it filled me with, I was overwhelmed. I'm getting teary now just talking about it. I was so thankful. Which is why I was willing to do any and everything. How many looks do we want to do? I'll do all of them. We are going to find a way. Where am I changing? Am I changing in the middle of this market, hiding behind a car door?
It wasn't very glamorous, I will say. Hiding behind a car door, getting changed. I mean, the look was major. Yeah, I have to say it was really special being there with you and seeing you in that mode because you feel it.
So I wanted to ask you about what's next for you.
Looking back, you've had an amazing year, you know. Looking back, what are some of the things that you're thinking, I want to bring into the new year? Like, I want to think about this. And what are the things that no longer serve you?
There's things I probably want to do less. Mm. And there's things I want to do more.
What do you want to do more of?
Yeah, what do I want to do more of? I definitely miss my alone time. So this period is definitely a I'm outside period.
Yes.
There's I'm outside. And I'm maxing out the outsideness because I know next year is going to be very work focused. And it requires me to again extract myself from being social. So that I can move forward with my stories, which I'm excited about. It's just quite nice to take the focus off of my own life and think about somebody else's for a while. It feels like it's been a very Michaela-centric year or two for me, and I've loved it. I also shy away from it, being a Brit and being Ghanaian.
The combo is tough.
The combo is tough. You know, I want to just constantly bow my head and avert my eyes from anybody looking at me. But I've been told, you know, especially by my mom, to try and process what's happening and recognize I still struggle. There's a reason that's happening. So the reasons I've clung to keep my sanity is that if I was young, if I was just me now, to see me, someone like me, on the cover of Vogue or in Black Panther or, you know, just in this platform, I'm getting teary, would probably have really changed the narrative that I had built for myself growing up, which is that I am not beautiful. Why would anybody ever want me to go on television? I have an ugly face. Why would I ever be there? There's all these horrible tales that we tell ourselves when we're not visible. So to possibly be part of changing that is really beautiful.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. I mean, the response, honestly, the people, the comments, the, you know, how many people were so grateful and so excited. And, It felt like such a warm moment. And how many warm moments do we get on the internet? I know you're not on social media.
Correct. So I missed the whole thing. That's the other thing.
N-A.
Yeah. N-A. I don't know what's happening. So like
I know. I was thinking about that as all of the messages and seeing the commentary and just like, oh God, I hope Michaela feels the love. Like
I can actually feel it. I can feel the love. I actually do, which is maybe more special than seeing the comments. I feel it in my soul.
Good. I'm so glad. And thank you so much. Pleasure. This is wonderful.
Always great. Thanks for having me, Gemma.
The Run Through Vogue is a production of Condé Nast Entertainment.
If you enjoyed our show, please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
And please tell your friends.
And enemies. If you want to get in touch with us, send us a note to therunthrough@vogue.com. We'd love to hear from you. I'm Chloe Mal.
And I'm Gemma Nardi.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.